ॐ हरिः ॐ तत्सत् श्रीगुरुभ्यो नमः हरिः ॐ ब्रह्मानन्दम् परमसुखदम् केवलम् ज्ञानमूर्ते द्वेषावहये ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः
Having analyzed the human pursuits, all that man pursues can be categorized into four groups as Artha, Kama, Dharma and Mokshaha. There is no fifth pursuit. And all the four human pursuits are equally important. And first three, Artha, Kama, Dharmas, can be known by another term as Prayas. And Moksha can be known by another term as Shreyas. Artha, Kama, Dharma, these three come under the category of Prayas. And Moksha come under the category of Shreyas. Artha, Kama, Dharmas are time-bound ends. Moksha is a timeless, everlasting end. In fact, Artha, Kama, Dharmas are relative ends and Moksha is an absolute end. Artha, Kama, Dharmas, which constitute the prayers, becomes means for the ultimate end, Mokshaha. How do they become means for the ultimate end, Mokshaha? Artha and Kamaha pursued in conformity with Dharma prepares the mind for knowledge, thereby they become indirect means for moksha, but the only means is for moksha is knowledge. It's very clear. Artha and Kama pursued in conformity with Dharma prepares the mind, makes one eligible for jnanam, which itself is Mokshaha. Thereby, Artha Kama pursuit along with Dharma becomes means for accomplishing the ultimate end. It is Moksha. And no pursuit is unimportant or no pursuit is unwanted. Okay, every pursuit is important, but we need to understand the limitations of the pursuits. What they can give, what they cannot give. And so the person who analyzes all these four pursuits, thereby arrives at the conclusion, right conclusion, oh, Mokshaha, this freedom from limitations, freedom from problems of life, is in fact happiness, is something to be understood as the sarupam of the reality, as the very nature of the reality. And this person knows the value of the knowledge of the reality, thereby he knows the value of the shastram, which serves as a means of knowledge. This person who knows the value of the knowledge, thereby who knows the value of shastram, which serves as means of knowledge, also knows the value of the sampradaya with the teacher who knows sampradaya. And this person also knows the value of values. Thereby, this person becomes, no, I told you, becomes the karma yogi. Who's a karma yogi? I told you, karma yoga lifestyle, karma yoga is a way of life, an eternal way of life, which helps one to become prepared for the knowledge, which is moksha. So the karma yogi, one who lives a life of karma yoga, is the one who knows, who has purushartha nischayaha, who knows the value of knowledge, who knows the value of the shastram, the value of the teacher, who knows the value of becoming mentally pure and steady. Thereby, who also knows the value of importance of living a life of values. Thereby, who is spiritual, who is religious, as well who is also ethical. Is it clear? Then I spoke to you about the bhakti. Therefore, bhakti is not a separate path for moksha. Very, very, very clear. Bhakti is not a separate path for moksha. To make it very clear, I said, if a person has purushartha nischayaha, until and unless one discovers what is that, the ultimate goal in human life, what is that, accomplishing which this human life becomes a meaningful, successful, no, and really one. What is that? All the failures in life do not make one's life a life of failure, a meaningless life. All the success in life really does not make one's life a meaningful, successful life. Real in this, with respect to, you know, from the standpoint of Shastram, if we view what is that which makes a life, you know, a meaningful and successful one? According to Shastram, if a person accomplishes moksha in one's life, then that life is a life of real accomplishment. Even if a person cannot accomplish moksha in one's life, at least if a person recognizes one's ultimate end being moksha, then that life becomes a life of, then that life becomes a meaningful life. If a person can really understand what is that, accomplishing which my life becomes, you know, meaningful and useful, then please understand, if a person can understand, ultimately all that they want in life is happiness, and that is something to be discovered. If a person knows this, we can say he has purushartha nischayaha. So unless and until a person has purushartha nischayaha, there is no, okay, unless and until somebody, recognizes the moksha being the ultimate end, there is no way of knowing the value of knowledge, of the reality. Unless and until a person understands the value of knowledge, there is no way of becoming committed to the pursuit of knowledge of the reality. Unless one knows, no, one becomes committed to the pursuit of knowledge, and there is no way of one becoming spiritual. Understand? When can you say, Namaskar, Mamanga. I was just thinking of you. Just your thought came. Oh, there's no problem. Are you comfortable there?
No. Okay.
So what I'm saying, it is very important. Why I'm repeating this here? Because they are very basic things. How can one become spiritual? What is that which makes a person spiritual person? One really anmihavadi. When does a person become spiritual? Okay, one can claim oneself to be spiritual only if the end is very clear. If one has purushartha nischayaha, purushartha, ultimate purushartha being moksha should be very clear, then knowledge being the only means should be very clear. The knowledge itself, knowledge of the reality itself being moksha should be very clear. Then one should become committed to the pursuit of knowledge. Oh, I want to know what the reality is. I want to know how all that is, there is only Bhagavan. Only when that desire to know comes, okay, is there, then that person is a spiritual person. Why? He is a jignyasu bhaktaha. He is a real devotee. And that person, because he is worshipful and prayerful, he is religious, and he, because he knows the value of values, is also ethical. I told you this much last class. Thereafter, I said the importance of, you know, the significance of meditation. I told the difference between concentration, meditation and contemplation. I used the three words. Remember three words? See, concentration, meditation and contemplation, all the three words, no, in fact, in all of them, one thing is common. What is that one thing is common? Mind is involved. When I say mind is involved, mind alone is involved. That means what? Attention of the mind is focused on a given object for a length of time. In all the three, attention of the mind is focused on a given thing. If the mind is not too distracted, okay, attention does not get distracted to too many things. If attention is focused on a given thing, then one can feel relaxed. Okay, one can feel, become free from, I mean, stress. So any concentration, concentrating on a given thing, one thing, helps one to relax. That is why when you attend the music, you know, classical music or any dance program or any fine art, any art, then your mind is totally focused on one thing, then you relax. Oh, attended this music program, it was so relaxing. Why? Your mind was, attention was held by music. Just simple concentration. Simply focusing attention on only one thing for a length of time. That's all. And you know, you're not thinking of too many things. When you think of too many things, then you feel giddy. Only one thing you're focusing, you're relaxed. That's all, simple thing. As people say, oh, cooking also is relaxation for me. Some people say this. Some people feel they go mad because every day thinking of what to cook next. Because they want to change the menu, they go mad. Some people say, cooking is relaxation for me. Why? Forget about everything, cut vegetables, do this, something like that. So, understand, why? Because when you are not distracted by too many things, any one thing which you do itself becomes, you know, means of relaxation. It helps you to become free from stress. Doesn't stress you out. It might help you to become free from stress. Therefore, is concentration. But, and I said, if the attention of the mind is focused on an object which is a symbol of the Lord, which stands for the Lord the whole, then this is called meditation. Okay? Therefore, nowhere can you focus attention for a long time. Can you say, I sat in meditation for 5 hours? Who will believe it? Okay? It's impossible. Attention will go here and there. So, okay? It's not meditation, really speaking. So, always willingly you try to focus your attention on a given object for length of time. Understand? That object of meditation, it is a symbol which stands for the Lord. It can be name or form of the Lord. It is called meditation. If the object of meditation is a symbol which stands for the Lord, then that meditation is what? Mental worship. Understand? We call it upasanam. Upasanam literally means meditation, being seated near. I told you, I think, did I explain this last class? Here? In this class? No. Here, I didn't say here. I'm just telling, I'll tell you one thing. Yeah. See, That's good. I said the word. I'll tell you one thing. Upasanam, I wanted to introduce the word upasanam. Upa means near. Asana means seat or being seated near. Okay? Arhil amardal. Sitting near. Being seated near. Okay? It's called upasanam. Upasanam. That means what? How can you sit near Bhagavan? So placing or focusing your attention of the mind on an object which stands for Bhagavan. Placing the attention of the mind near Bhagavan is what? Upasanam. Now we do not know who Bhagavan is. How can you place attention near Bhagavan? Understand? That is why we have a symbol which stands for Bhagavan. So placing the attention of the mind near an object, a symbol which stands for Bhagavan, is what? Upasanam. It can be a name of the Lord. I can be a form of the Lord. Upasanam, this is what I told you. So focusing your attention of the mind on an object which stands for Ishvara, Bhagavan, is meditation. Okay, it's called Dhyanam. It's also called Upasanam. Therefore, Dhyanam or Upasanam is a mental worship. Apart from that, if you do any other worship in other form of worship, what is that? A worship wherein a physical activity is involved and also oral activity is involved. I told about the vachikam karma or manasam karma. A puja, when you say, it involves vachikam karma, kayikam karma and also manasam karma. There is physical activities involved, oral activities involved, mental activity also is involved. There, if the attention is there in the action which you are doing, as you are doing without thinking of anything else, attention is in that very karma you are doing, then physical activity, the kayikam karma puja also becomes meditation, upasanam. Understand? And the vachikam karma also, the attention is there in what you are chanting, then that becomes what? Upasanam, meditation. The puja which involves physical, oral, mental activity becomes meditation, upasanam, if the attention is there. Understand? Attention is not there. If you mechanically do it, it is not upasanam. So punya karma, that's all. Now you know what is concentration, what is meditation, and how even the physical oral activities can be converted into puja, into upasanam, meditation. These two words, remember, upasanam, dhyanam, they are synonyms. Then I said one more word, contemplation. contemplation is meditation. Contemplation is concentration. Contemplation is also what? In contemplation also, attention of the mind is focused on the very self, the very nature of the reality. Okay? Nature of the reality, which implies you must have already understood the nature of the reality. I won't tell you that today now. Okay? Contemplation. Did I speak of contemplation last class? Here? Okay, I'm going to tell you about it. Let me tell you. Okay. Is it clear? Contemplation. Now, you know the difference between the concentration and meditation. Okay? Then, when I say contemplation, the object of meditation is the very self, the nature of the reality. So, meditating upon the nature of the very reality is contemplation. There is no form is involved, mantra is involved. Meditating upon the very swarupam of the reality is contemplation, which in the long run, in due course of time, will result in us having the ascertained vision of the reality, which is jnanam or moksha. Understand? Now I told you. So, contemplation, I use the word contemplation, how can you meditate upon the nature of the reality without having understood the nature of the reality? Parampurul edune theriyama eppadi parampurule dhyanikkirathu. Understand? That is why, and here, to understand what these three words exactly, because you shouldn't get confused about it, because people are practicing lot of meditative techniques. That's why I have to tell you in this context, okay, what comes first. See, the knowledge of the reality. When I say knowledge of the reality, parambarulai patriya arivu. The ascertained, doubt-free knowledge of the reality, okay, which itself is moksha, which is discovery of happiness, limitlessness, involves three steps. Knowledge of the reality involves three steps. That means there are three steps involved in this. What are the three steps? First step is Shravanam. 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 Shravanam is a simple word. It means listening or hearing. Listening to what? So, listening to the subject matter of the Vedanta Shastram from a competent teacher who knows the method of unfoldment. Therefore, listening to the subject matter of the Shastram systematically, regularly, from the competent teacher who knows the method of unfoldment, thereby understanding the subject matter of the Vedanta Shastram is called Shravanam. How can you understand the Shastram without listening to the teacher? Therefore, understanding the subject matter of the Shastram by listening to the teacher is called systematically, regularly, for a length of time. Overnight you can't understand everything. Okay? This is Shravanam. So only after having done the Shravanam, or as you are doing the Shravanam, it is possible for one to have many doubts. When you are totally ignorant of subject matter, you cannot have any doubts at all. Understand? When you have perfect clarity also, you cannot have any doubts. Always doubts are possible only when you start listening. Understand? Only then you start thinking. That is why doubts are possible. Shastra study helps you to think more and differently. It sharpens the mind, buddhi. Okay? Therefore, and as you are listening, as you are understanding, the doubts might come, and by further listening, by repeatedly listening and understanding, reflecting on what is heard and understood, eliminating the doubts is called mananam, which is the next step. So what is mananam? Mananam means reflecting, okay, or repeatedly thinking and reflecting on what has been heard and understood, thereby eliminating the doubts one has in what has been heard is called mananam. சாஸ்திரத்தை புரிந்து கொள்ளுதல் ஸ்ரவணம். புரிந்து கொண்டதில் உள்ள சந்தேகங்களை மீண்டும் மீண்டும் கேட்டு நிவர்த்தி செய்து கொள்ளுதல் மனநம். அர்த்தார்த்த நிமிக தமிழில் சொல்பாத்தன சும்னா சொல்ப தமிழில் மாத்தடணும் தான். யூ அண்டர்ஸ்டாண்ட் தமிழ்? ஓகே. No, I won't use Tamil at all. I'm not going to use Tamil. No more Tamil. I speak only in English. Shumna solpa. Hagaga solpa. Mananam.
M-A-N-A-M-A-N.
M-A-N-A-M.
M-A-M.
Mananam. Mananam. Oh, maybe I was fast. I'll be slow. Okay, let me be slow. No, I've become fast. Very very slow now. Mm. I used to be very much faster speaker. Mm. Ask them; they all trained me now. Swaminiji, you Indians are very fast, and you are much faster. I was even in India. I was the fastest speaker, and then my mother used to tell me, "Come on, please be slow." Basically, I had this problem of speaking very fast. Yashoda knows me actually. I used to speak very fast. Mm-hmm. But when I start teaching, I'm very clear on what I'm saying. So I will go systematically very slowly. Mm. Sometimes if I'm fast, you can make out I'm very sleepy. Whenever I'm sleepy, I become very fast in expressions. Okay. Now you know the three steps involved in knowledge. First step is Shravanam. Shravanam literally means listening. But here we have to understand listening to the subject matter of the Shastram from the teacher systematically, regularly, and thereby understanding the subject matter of the Shastram is called Shravanam. Having understood the subject matter, or as you are listening and understand the Shastram, repeatedly listening to the same thing and repeatedly thinking of what, the same thing, and reflecting on what is heard and understood, eliminating the doubts in what has been heard is called mananam.
Is this the second step?
Yeah, second step, mananam. So how can you eliminate the doubts if you don't have doubts at all? Understand? So doubts must be there, thereby you can eliminate the doubts. How can I eliminate the doubts? By reflecting on whatever has been heard and understood. So first you must have understood, then, heard, understood, and some doubts must be there, then you reflect on what has been heard, then your doubts resolve. Called mananam. Then having eliminated the doubts, and when you have clear understanding, this is what is the reality, Okay, how the whole Jagat is not the reality, is that when the knowledge becomes very clear, then only then you can concentrate on, you can focus your attention on the nature of the reality. Understand? So focusing the attention of the mind on the nature of the reality, having understood very clearly what the reality is, after the elimination of the doubts, is called what? Nididhyasanam. 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 Nididhyasanam means contemplation. Nididhyasanam. Understand? These three words you should remember now. So, now tell me, if you do not know what the reality is, how can you meditate upon it? Understand? Why do you need to meditate upon the nature of the reality? To ascertain the nature of the reality. Because sometimes you understand things and you will forget the things. If you should not forget it at all forever, then you should get it ascertained, assimilated. Understand? Assimilated understanding is very important. For assimilation of the knowledge, always you have to contemplate on it continuously, constantly, consistently. Then you can ascertain it. So constant, continuous, consistent, okay, dwelling upon the nature of the reality is what? Contemplation. Nididhyasanam. Understand? So, that's why Nididhyasanam, if somebody has to, Nididhyasanam alone will result in the ascertained, doubt-free knowledge. No, steadfast knowledge, which is mokshaha. Understand? So, how can you moksha is possible, okay? Moksha means what? Completely becoming free from all limitations, okay, and understanding what exactly is the word limitlessness means, happiness means, that is possible only if you have ascertained doubt-free knowledge of the reality. Idudan Suryan, this is the sun. Only if it becomes clear, you know what this is, how the sun is. There is no other illuminator other than the sun will be very clear. Okay, therefore, this ascertained vision of the reality is possible only if you constantly dwell upon the nature of the reality. And if you have to dwell upon the nature of the reality, if you have to meditate upon the nature of the reality, you should have understood what the reality is. How can you meditate upon something which you do not know at all? And to understand the nature of the reality, you must have already done what? Mananam and Shravanam. So without Shravanam, Mananam is not possible. Without Mananam, Nididhyasanam is not possible. Without Nididhyasanam, okay, ascertained vision is not possible. Without the ascertained vision, moksha is not possible. People always say, in Tamil they say, Iraivane Dhyani. How can you meditate upon the Lord if you do not know what the Lord means? People always say, Kadule Dhyani. How to meditate upon the Lord? It's like saying, understand, other than other than meditating upon the reality, meditating on anything else will not take you anywhere from where you are. Meditating upon anything other than the nature of reality will not take you anywhere from where you are, from what you are. You may say, you may have a false feeling that you are, I'm meditating. Understand? Therefore, it's very important. So, Shravanam should have been done first, then Maranam is possible. The Maranam is done, Nidhyasanam also is possible. But in our class, we have to see, our class itself will become Shravanam. As the class progresses, the class will become Mananam, the class itself will become Nididhyasanam also. But it's a question of time. Understand? What I am saying, suppose I told you last class also, if I ask you to meditate upon rambutan, I told you about it. Didn't I say this in the class? And except Sri Lankans, none of us will know what rambutan is, so we can't meditate upon it. It is not possible to meditate upon something which we do not know. Now you remember.
Yes, you should have brought a basket.
No. Now I remember, I told you about all these things earlier. Understand? That is why, always before you meditate also, you should know what you are meditating on. That is where all the statements become very vague. If you say, meditate upon the Lord, meditate upon God, attain moksha. How to meditate upon the God without knowing who the God is? Understand? Anyway, now I tell you, therefore, so this nididhyasanam or contemplation is also what? Is meditation, but the object of meditation is the very nature of the reality. So meditation is not contemplation. Why? In meditation, the object of meditation is something which stands for the Lord, which is a symbol of the Lord. Understand? Whereas in contemplation, meditate upon the very nature of the Lord, the reality. Anyway, doesn't matter. These things will become very clear later on. Again, I'll repeat these things. I think I said last week this much. Till now, whatever I said, I spoke all these things last class, I think. You were there last class? You were not there. Anyway. Now the next question comes, okay, don't worry about Nididhyasanam now. Just I wanted to understand the words. Why? Because people want to meditate. Swamiji, will you be teaching meditation? Everywhere people ask me meditation. That is why I just want to tell you, before you ask me, I am in a hurry to tell you, please don't ask me for any meditation class now. We will do meditation later on when the time comes, because we have to understand a lot of things before we step into the practice of meditation. The class itself will prepare you, make your mind subtle and subtle and subtle. You'll understand things, then slowly you will become meditative. That is why I'm in a hurry to tell you this. Any people ask me always, do you practice meditation? What meditation do you practice? Would you please, because I think Swami means some funny person, okay? And I'm a mystic person, and you have that experience, this experience. I don't have any experience.
Somebody asked me if you give Arul Vak.
See? Arul Vak paapingla, Satram paapingla. They also ask me whether I can predict astrology, horoscope. I do predict the chart, but I don't want to do the job, okay? I want to tell you how to. I can do that, but I don't do that. Arul Vak, Purul Vak. All walks they want, okay? They want to know whether I can give some things.
Future blessing.
Prediction.
No, whether I can, like some jadu mantra, like something I will do. Anyway, people have their own ideas, okay. We see something will happen, nothing will happen, I said. And now what I'm saying, that is why I'm in a hurry to say this. Now that is why this is what is actually, I wanted to know about what meditation is all about. This is what is contemplation, this is what is meditation, this is what is just the concentration. So now you know the relevance of practice of any technique in disciplining the mind, in preparing oneself for jnanam. So contemplation will result in ascertained vision, which is knowledge and moksha. Whereas meditation will help only to have mental steadiness, single-pointedness. And these things again we'll discuss. I'm going to discuss the Shravanam, Manam, Nidhyasanam again after some time. But it will more elaborately in the proper context, right context. Now I'm giving you as introduction to the classes. I'm preparing you for starting the text. Okay. Now let me tell you one more thing. Okay, if we do Shravanam and we do Mananam, we do Nidhyasanam, that's fine. Before Mananam and Nidhyasanam, we are going to do Shravanam also. We are going to understand the matter of the Shastram. And I told you, this Shastra Shravanam, you know, how does Shastram, you know, reveal the nature of the self? How does it make you understand the nature of the self? That means it has to use a given methodology, given method. We already saw reality, the absolute reality of the whole universe has to be understood as the very self, not as an external thing. I told you already, because you are part of the universe. I told you this. If the wave has to understand the truth of the entire ocean being water, and the wave being itself being part of the ocean, it has to understand the water as its own sarupam. Thereby it has to understand the sarupam of the entire ocean and all the waves being the water. Similarly, here also, to understand the nature of the whole reality, entire universe, the reality of the entire universe, to understand the reality of the entire universe, one has to know the very self. Therefore, Shastram helps, Shastram, you first methodology, the Shastram uses, to distinguish the self from the non-self. Did I tell you this? Oh, I did there. But here I didn't use any technical term. Yeah. No, the Shastram helps us first to distinguish the self from the non-self. Thereby it helps you to arrive at the self. And what is that methodology, first methodology? I said, Drik Drishya Viveka Prakriya. Drik Drishya Viveka Prakriya. Prakriya means a method of unfoldment, a given methodology. Method of analysis is called prakriya. And drik means seer. Seer or knower. Yeah. Drik actually means seer. Drishyam means the seen. Seen. Literally, the word drishyam literally means the seen. To be seen. So, drik, drishya, prakriya means the method of, the method of distinguishing the self, the seer, from the seen, the non-self. So, Drik Drishya, I am repeating it. Drik Drishya Viveka Prakriya means the method of distinguishing the seer from the seen, thereby arriving at the seer as the self. You can also...
Viveka
means what? No, I mean, Viveka means, no, I mean, discriminating, differentiating. It does not distinguishing, I said. Distinguish. Discerning. Prakriya means, I told you, see, the word is called method, it's a name, okay? Prakriya means prakaraha. E prakaradalli madidivi, anta helthiralla. E prakaradalli, anta. Prakriya anvadu, prakriya, see, Kannada shabda that is. Prakriya means prakaraha. Yav prakaradalli, anna? Prakarahandra, prakriya. Prakriya means methodology. So, understand now. So, here, this prakriya, understand, drik stands, means seer. Drishyam means seen. And vivekaha means distinguishing, discerning, differentiating, okay, discriminating, little so many means other. So, distinguishing the self. Okay, distinguishing. Distinguishing the seer from the seen. So, seer stands for the self and the seen stands for the non-self. Drik stands for the self and Drishyam stands for the non-self. Therefore, Drik, Drishya, Viveka, Prakriya means the method wherein you distinguish the self, the seer, from the non-self, the seen. Not Dvaitam.
Not Dvaitam.
I'm not using any word at all. No.
Okay.
Just listen to this, okay? Right. Just the methodology I'm saying. You distinguish it. How to understand what a self is. Understand, that's what I'm saying. First you have to understand what the self is. Then you have to say all that is only the self. That's a different thing. You don't even know what the self is. Now, how can you say that? Suppose the wave has to say, oh, all that is, there is only water. There is no second thing other than the water. There's only ocean, there's no thing called wave separately. It has to say, you should know what the water is first. And for the wave to know what the water is, it has to distinguish the water from the wave, the form and name. Understand? Similarly, here also, Drikdhishyaveka Prakriya helps you to distinguish the seer from the seen, the self from the non-self. Understand? So, how does that Prakriya, and is also known as subject-object analysis. Drik Drishya Viveka Prakriya is also known as subject-object analysis. So this is the first kindergarten method used. Okay? Very, very important method. Many Prakriyas are not there, but further study helps it to, enhance the clarity. Now, what is subject-object analysis? Why do you say subject-object analysis? If we take a sentence, okay, Rama sees, as the squirrel. Then when you say, Rama is a subject and sees is a verb, the squirrel is an object. Like that, when I say, I see the light. Then the light is an object. Okay, seeing is an action. The seer, subject. Is a subject. Therefore, I the seer am the subject. The light, the object. The subject and object. So here also, when you say anything and everything which is seen through any of, perceived through any of these senses is what? Object of knowledge. Anything which is perceived through any of the senses is an object of knowledge. I am the seer, okay, the light is the seen, therefore I am the seer, I am different from the seen light. The subject is always different from this object. The subject is never mistaken for the object. Okay, so that's why we say, what is an object here? Anything and everything which is indicated by any pronoun other than I is an object of knowledge. Anything and everything indicated by any pronoun other than the first person singular pronoun I is an object of knowledge. Isn't it? Very simple. Therefore, the light is an object of knowledge. Sound is an object of knowledge. Smell is an object of knowledge. Taste is an object of knowledge. Touch is an object of knowledge. And I, the seer, I, the knower, am different from all these known objects of knowledge. Heat and cold, objects of knowledge. Fragrance and stink, objects of knowledge. Form and color, objects of knowledge. Taste is an object of knowledge. Hot or sour or bitter or taste sweet, any taste is an object of knowledge. Where all the objects of knowledge are different, I the self, okay, I am the knower. I the knower am different from all the known objects of knowledge. And something, an object is very far from me, I can use the pronoun that. That is a statue. An object is very close to me, I can say this is a clock. Whether this I use the pronoun that or this, still objects indicated by two different pronouns, that or this, whether close, near or far, still there are objects of knowledge. I, the knower, the seer, am different from the known objects. Far or near. I never mistake the object for subject. The known is the object. The knower is the subject. The known object is never mistaken for the knower, the subject. Isn't it? Similarly, when they come closely, things come closely, I said that is a statue, that is a mirror, that's a wall, that's a lamp. I point out like that. Now come closer. Oh, this is peacock feather. And this is a chair. And this is my dress. Then comes the body. Okay, I can't say that is a body. But still I can say this is a body. Okay, so these feet, these toes, these nails, these shanks, these thighs, this stomach, this front, this back, this trunk, these limbs, these hands, these fingers, these nails, this head, this nose, these lips, these teeth, these cheeks, this chin, this... See, look at this. Nothing of this body can be indicated by the pronoun I. Understand? Therefore, this whole physical gross body, this is called gross physical body. Why do I call it gross? It's concrete, it is tangible, it is heavy, it can be touched, it can be seen, it can be felt, it can be smelt also. Understand? Therefore, this physical body is an object of knowledge, known like a statue, like this feather, this light, or this table. This physical body also is an object of knowledge. Therefore, I, the seer, I, the knower, am the subject different from the known physical body, the gross body. Understand? Gross body. I told you already, anything known is an anatma, the non-self. Anything known is a known is anatma, I can say non-self. I don't want to use all those things now. Wait for me to come to that. Systematically, let's go systematically. I know you would have heard different places things. Let us go systematically, I'm saying. Because it's very important. What happened? This is what happened with some people whom I met first. I thought they were, because then they were chanting here and there, they were reading Upanishads and Gita, they were reading here and there, they go in different classes. So I thought, oh, they've been exposed already. So they know certain things. So what I did, the biggest mistake, without starting from the scratch, I thought they already know things, so I had it somewhere in between. Then I realized, my God, every step, a lot of doubts. Why? Because they can't be with me. They had to ask questions. And the Shastra tradition does not allow questions in between. Why? Until the teacher finishes, you can't raise your doubts. You can always, by the time the teacher finishes, the doubts must have been resolved. That's a tradition. Because what to say next, what to say next, it's a systematic teaching. Why I did a mistake, I thought when I heard them saying things from, you know, the shlokas and mantras which they have been studying and all that, oh, they know the Upanishad, they quote, they chant this and that, and they know everything. They know, they have been exposed, and they know things already. But when they have heard here and there, but they have not studied systematically, you know, systematic study is very important. What to start with first? What is first? What is next? What is next? If unless we go that way, things get confused. That is why I'm repeating so many times. When people don't miss the class also, in the very beginning, I was repeating every time. I had in a hurry to go because I'm in... Then I realized, no, I had to start from the scratch. That is why let us go systematic. You might have heard these things outside. But... just be with me and learn the terms I'm teaching here. And you, whatever you heard already, understood already, let them be there on corner, no problem. But you'll understand clearly here. Is it okay? We'll do all the prakriyas, everything, all those koshas, everything I'll talk later on, systematically. So therefore, we say this physical body is a non-self, an anatma, where I, the knower, am different from the known gross physical body. This is the first negation. Okay? Therefore, through the method of negation, using the drik drishya viveka prakriya, through the method of negation, Shastram helps you to distinguish the self from the non-self. Negation means what? First you negate the body as the non-self. All until this time, we had very strong understanding. We mistake the body also for I. There's I notion. I sense strong I sense in the physical body. I don't say you should not have I sense at all in the physical body. When you want to go, I have to get up and go, you have to tell me and go. Nothing wrong. But still, generally, it is some, okay? This physical body, we have very strong I notion in the body, aham buddhihi in the body. Now we understand the body as an object of knowledge definitely is different from the subject. The subject is different from the object. Therefore, the knower, the seer, the self is not the known physical body. Then we go to the next step. What is the next step? Okay, this physical body has been negated as the non-self. you have distinguished the self being different from the physical body. What is next is we call it subtle body. There is a subtle body which is called Sukshma Shariram. I'll be repeating all these things again later on. It's the first preparation. I'm going to make it. I'll repeat this again, again, again. So next is Sukshma Shariram. The Sthula Shariram has been negated. Now the Sukshma Shariram. Sukshma Shariram means subtle body. Subtle body. Subtle, even though I use the word subtle body is not tangible, not concrete, not gross, not visible, not perceptible like this sthulam. Therefore, it has no form, it is formless. Therefore, why subtle body? That's why we call subtle. Why we call subtle body? Subtle, even though I use the word body, does not mean subtle body has a form. Body, when you hear the word body, immediately we think of some form. But here, subtle body, for want of expression, I use the word subtle body. Subtle body is formless. It is not tangible. It is not concrete. It is not gross. It is not visible. It is not perceptible. Perceptible means what? It is perceptible. It is not perceptible through the senses. Pulungal moolam sukshma udambi ariya mudiyadu. That's what I want to say. You cannot see it through senses. Now, subtle body. And subtle body consists of 16 factors. Some people might say 19, but I don't want to confuse you. Better make it 16. I'll tell you why. You'll understand 16 or 19, it means the same. Not big difference. 16 is proper to say that.
Sorry, can you say that again? Subtle body has
16. Consists of 16. 16 factors. 16 factors together constitute the subtle body. So what are they? We say 5 sense organs. Pancha jnana indriyani. 5 sense organs. What are the 5 sense organs? Five sense organs. Eyes, nose, tongue, ears and skin. But I tell you, when I say the 5 sense organs, I do not mean the physical parts. In Sanskrit, we have to differentiate it. When I say eyeball is the physical part which belongs to the gross body. But just as a seeing power, the indriyam. Indriyam means the power of seeing. The power, just the power in the eyes. Then the seeing power is called indriyam. And hearing power in the drums. Hearing power. And the ear lobe is a physical part. When I say ear, we draw like this. Understand? It's the organ of hearing. The power of hearing is what? Is subtle. You can see the ear lobe. If you operate, you can even see the drums, but the hearing power you cannot see. Understand? So hearing power. Similarly, the power of smelling, the power of tasting, the power of touch in all the 5 senses. The skin is only a physical part, but the skin has the special power of touch. The power of the knowing, sense of touch. Therefore, the organ of touch. Therefore, we have 5 different sense powers. they are subtle. You know whether your eyes can see or not. You know whether you hear or not. You know whether you smell or not. You know whether you feel the taste or not. You know whether you feel the warmth or chillness here, cold. Understand? Therefore, you know all your five sense powers. You know or not? You know them. You know all the five sense powers. Therefore, each sense organ, the power of seeing, hearing, etc., each sense organ is known to you, not to the others. It is known to you. The physical body is known to everybody. My physical body is known to you, is known to, okay, your physical body is known to you, your physical body is known to others also. Listen, your gross body, physical body is known to you, it is known to others also. But the subtle body is known only to you, not to others. I cannot see your subtle body, you cannot see my subtle body. But all of us can see each other's gross bodies. Gross body is known to you, it's known to others also. But subtle body is known only to oneself, only to you. I know my senses. I know you cannot say whether I can see or not. Others cannot say whether I can hear or not. Whereas, I know whether I can hear or not.
But by speaking to you, I know that you hear. You heard me. Now you know. I know that you heard me. So I know that you are hearing.
But something. Still, again, perception, based on perception, I can't just I can't say that. No, you're not only hearing it. No, still I do not know. I cannot say you can hear. You only know whether you hear or not. I can say, I can assume simply, he's sitting in my class, he's listening to me, he must be hearing. Still you're not here. Sometimes you're not here also. Understand? Therefore, hearing. You cannot hear.
You can only sense that hearing.
No, he's just joking. He knows it.
He's just being.
You cannot hear sitting here. And I know. Sometimes we don't hear also. Sitting there. Yeah, many people sit. Yeah. Now what I'm saying, you know whether you can hear or not. It means what? All the sense powers are known to you. Therefore, we say, because they are known, okay, come under the category of the known, therefore they are also objects of knowledge. Therefore, you can say, I the knower am different from the known sense organs, sense powers. Therefore, I the knower am the subject, is different from the known seeing power, hearing power, power of smelling, power of taste and touch. This is second negation. Understand? The subtle body itself, I finished only 5. I told you 16 factors constitute the subtle body. What are the next 5 factors? 5 organs of actions. Karma Indriyani. Next is 5 Karma Indriyani.
This one is, if you don't mind. I don't understand why the knower is different from the known senses.
Yeah, because knower is the subject. Known is the object. We are distinguishing the subject from the object. Because we have arrived, we do not know who the knower is. We have to ultimately arrive at the who the knower is.
Oh, right.
Okay? To arrive at who the knower is, we have to first of all distinguish the knower. You cannot arrive, understand the problem. Why? Because subtlest reality. If you don't distinguish, now the problem is we mistake all this for the self. We are mistaking the non-self for the self. Therefore, we have to distinguish the self from the non-self. Thereafter, we will see who this knower is. See, because the knower, the self is available for recognition as the very knower. Understand? And we have to distinguish it. By negating what the self is not, we have to arrive at what the self is. Understand? This is what the very big teaching of Upanishad is what now. Neti neti vachanehi means what? Upanishad first negates what the self is not. By negating what the self is not, it helps you to arrive at, understand what the self is. Okay? To negate what the self is not, thereby to understand what the self is, it uses the first Drit Drishya Viveka Prakriya. Is it clear? And there we negated physical body as the object of knowledge. Therefore, we know the self, the knower, the subject, I, the knower, am the subject, different from the known physical body, I, the knower, am the subject, different from the known five sense organs. Now, we are going to see the next five organs of actions. Pancha Karma Indriyani. I'm not going to the mind today, okay? I'll stop with the Karma Indriyani and go. Subtle body and go. I'll come back for the next class for the mind. Okay, karma, pancha karma, indriyani. What are they? Hands, legs, organ of speech, reproductory organ, and excretory organ. Okay, five organs of actions, hands, legs, organ of speech, reproductory organ, then the organ of excretory organ. Now, see, all these organs of actions, there again you see the physical part, but you see the subtle power. You know whether your hands can move or not, you know whether your legs can walk or not, you know whether you can produce sound or not. You know the organ of speech. You know the speech can come out or not. You know all the organs of actions. You know your reproductory organ. You know your excretory organ. You know your organ of speech. You know your hands and legs. Understand all the subtle powers. You can't see the indriyam, karma indriyam, the power, the hand, just by seeing the hand, you can only see the hand. Understand? But I know whether I can move or not. Is it clear? Therefore, I'll explain to you again when you come back next class. Just now we know this much. There are five organs of action, and I have to explain to you everything in detail. Every organ of action is known to me. I know whether my legs can move or not. I know whether my hands function or not. I know whether my organ of speech is capable of functioning or not. I know my organs of actions. They are known to me. Understand? Therefore, I, the knower, am the subject different from the known five organs of actions. So, five karma indriyani, pancha karma indriyani. Don't worry, I'll be, after I give you the textbook also, I'll repeat this. That's not very cool now. It's only first listening. Second exposure will make it very clear. Now we go to five physiological functions. Pancha pranaha. Pancha pranaha. What are the five physiological functions? The respiration, the function of respiration involving inhalation and exhalation, and function of excretion, and function of circulation, and fourth, function of digestion, and the function of retention. Okay? Five physiological functions. Only one vital air is governing five different functions. Because five different functions are there, the same vital air is given five different names as pancha pranaha, as five physiological functions. What are they? Pranaha, apanaha, dhyanaha, samanaha, and udanaha. I'll repeat it. Pranaha, apanaha, vyanaha, vy, vyanaha, samanaha, and udanaha. So here pranaha stands for respiratory system, apanaha stands for excretory system, vyanaha stands for circulatory system, and samanaha stands for digestive system, and udanaha stands for retentive system. Okay, and all the functions, you know, I'll explain to you next class when I come back. Okay, when you say all these five pranas, see, your digestion, function of digestion is known to you. If it is not known, wait till 10 o'clock without eating anything, you'll feel some noise. Okay? And function of the respiration is known to you. Your inhalation is known. Your exhalation is known. Even though you don't give attention to it, really. You don't attend to it. If you really pay attention, then you can know. There is inhalation, exhalation, digestion, of course circulation. Even though you don't see the functions through physical eyes, you know, all the four are retained inside. Understand? Retained. They're happening constantly because of the retentive system, the reversing system. Understand? And all the five functions are known to you. Even in deep sleep state, when nothing is known, even when you can say the whole jagat is not there, still the functions are happening. That is, we are able to get up next day morning. The function stop means what? One thing which never stops from day one gets conceived in the womb of the mother. The day one you are born as a full-fledged, no, human form, as a baby, till the last minute, these functions, physiological functions, take place continuously. Okay, when these functions stop, that is called death. Okay, that is a pranaha gataha. Pranan poitan. When do we say? Avaru poitare. Yare prana. Then that is when, and then okay, then you can't say I have gone. You can't tell people, you are not there to tell people that you have gone. Okay, others have to say the prana has gone. A send word or phone, ring, inform people. When is the cremation? Okay? What is the cremation? Now these things we talk only when the prana goes. So for prana, these physiological functions, endless, non-stopping, okay, constant functions. Constantly they have to be on. Always on duty. No off from work. They never take off from work. The time that they take off from work, others have to take off from work. Okay. Now what I'm saying? Because to do the antyeshti karma for the person who has gone, okay? Anyway, so what I'm saying, these five physiological functions are known, very, very subtle. The 16th factor is mind. Now what I say here, this pancha jnana indriyani, pancha karma indriyani, pancha pranaha plus mind, the antahkaranam. Antahkaranam, okay, the internal organ, we say mind, understand? I'm not talking about the mind today. I'll leave it for next class. I'll also explain other things we want next class again. So these 16 factors together constitute subtle body, sukshma shariram. I told you already, sukshma shariram, every sukshma shariram is known to oneself. But if gross physical body is known to oneself, also to others. It doesn't matter. What is known to others is not important here. Okay? This physical body is known to me. Subtle body also is known to me. Therefore, I, the knower, okay, am the subject different from the known subtle body also. Or the known subtle body, we have negated already 15 aspects of the subtle body, 5 sense organs, 5 organs of action, and 5 physiological functions as objects of knowledge. Is it okay? Mind, we have to do, next class we'll do it. Is it clear now? Therefore, they're all known. We'll come back and see next class.
Can you please tell me the Sanskrit word for physical body?
Sthula shariram. Sthula. Sthula shariram.
S-T-H. Oh, I see. Thank you.
I'll be giving you the book. I'll be explaining to you again the words. I'm only just introducing little bit. It's only very basic, preliminary introduction, preparatory introduction for the introduction of the Shastra. Understand? I'll be repeating them a lot. Many times I'll be repeating things. Because what happens, everywhere people go for the basic classes, they don't see a lot of other things. They understand this and then people come, I'm not the body, I'm not the mind. Then, no, it's not for talking. It's only for understanding. It will confuse, no? That's why. Let us go slowly. Mm-hmm. Anyway, it's all known. So now we have negated the anatomical system as well as the physiological system. Understand? Now we have to next negate the psychological system later on. Physiological, anatomical systems have been negated as the known objects of knowledge. Therefore, we know very well the knower, I, the subject, okay, I, the knower, the self, and the subject, different from the known objects. Therefore, the knower, the self, is not the known non-self. Om. त्र्यंबकयजामहे सुगंधिं पुष्टिवर्धनम् उर्वारुकमिव बंधनान् मृत्योर्मुक्षीयमामृतात् ओम त्र्यंबकयजामहे सुगंधिं पुष्टिवर्धनम्।